Well, I had mentioned this morning that we were going to talk a little bit about what we talked about a couple few weeks ago. To kind of run through this just real quickly as a reminder, the book that I got some of this from, the ideas at least, of first, second, and third world thinking, Carl Truman is the gentleman's name, PhD in sociology and psychology and things like that, but The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, and it was written in 2020, or published in 2020. So it's not a book that was 1950s thinking, and now we're trying to apply it in this time frame. But his basic point is that the world we live in right now is a world that has been highly influenced by thinkers from as far back as Jean-Jacques Rousseau, which that goes back into the early 1700s. So it's not that we're in a place in the world where this is just something that's come up. This has been in development for quite a while. And the concept is this. A first world thinker is the sort of person who looks outside themselves for truth. They don't believe in God, but they believe maybe in higher beings. They believe in the universe. They believe in something that's outside themselves that is an absolute. And it's an ongoing thing. It's greater than themselves. They don't look to themselves to figure everything out. The second world thinkers, and I don't know, this is just how he's put it, is people like you and me. We believe in God, and we do also believe in absolutes. And so first world and second world thinkers can pretty easily talk to each other because at least they have a foundation of similarity, and that is we think outside ourselves. The truth is not within me. I don't define truth by what I'm feeling today or how I'm thinking today or anything like that. I'm not the standard. The standard is outside of me, whether it's the gods, like the Greeks thought with their mythology and, I mean, a very highly developed system of stories, which, to be honest with you, there are a lot of people who look to religion in the same way as mythology, that it's just all made up. But still, with first and second world thinkers, there is a standard outside. Third world thinkers, Truman suggests, is simply those who today are thinking that the world revolves around themselves. And it is essentially that. That's more of a distillation probably than we really want, because he doesn't write things in a short way. But that's kind of the point. I choose my truth. And the language probably has been coming up in the last 10 years, 15 years, where more and more people are saying things like, well, I hear what you're saying, but here's my truth. You remember, what was it, just probably within the last 10 years, we had a woman who says she identified herself as a black woman. She was president of NAACP, and come to find out, she wasn't black at all. You know, no genetic black. But that's how she identified herself. And there were a lot of people, I would include myself, just kind of making fun of her, identifying as something that she's not. But that's what people do today more and more. And social media has helped fuel a lot of this. Because we have a platform now. Anybody can say pretty much anything they want. This afternoon, for a few minutes, I'm going through Twitter just kind of seeing what's going on with Ukraine, to be honest with you. And as I'm reading things, somebody put just plain, there is no God. Well, immediately, you're wanting to go through the thread, which is how people are going to be arguing. And there are all kinds of people who are saying all kinds of things. And ultimately, from many of the people who were saying anything was, there is no God because I don't think there is one. He hasn't done anything for me. One guy was trying to be funny, I think, and just saying he hasn't called me anytime recently, you know, that kind of idea. People make fun of religiously minded people. That, how else to say it? There is not exactly the best history in the religious world in general for good things. The Roman Catholic Church has done so much damage, and that was one of the things I noticed in the Twitter feed. I mean, it was like 500-600 people saying things. Most of them, if they had any sort of religious experience in their life, it was Roman Catholicism, and they just didn't like the way a priest made them feel, you know, creeped them out, that kind of thing. And I'm like, well, okay, I kind of get that. But again, it's just, this is my truth. This is what I think. And in the end, I guess they just expect that everyone's going to fall right into how they think. Because it's them thinking it. And we, This is one of the things I've always found a little interesting, I guess weird even. We say things like birds of a feather flock together because we know how that is. I mean, that's just how things are. We look for people to talk to who speak the same language. And I mean, even by that, like someone like me, I ride motorcycles. When I hook up with guys who ride motorcycles, we have our own language. It's not like we sit there and plan how to talk to each other, but we do talk. We talk about displacement. We talk about, I'm trying to think of examples. I'd have to be in a conversation where it's things that we talk about that you don't talk about in any other normal situation. And if someone doesn't know much about them and they come up and they start asking questions, some people look down, condescend, and say, well, you just don't know. Others are kind of like me, or like we've all been beginners. So we've all had to start from the beginning, and language develops that way. So we have a religious language. We talk about sanctification. We talk about justification. We talk about sins. And the world that we live in now, it's not just now. This is mankind from centuries ago, from millennia ago, where we have decided that we do our own things our own ways. We call things in a different way, you know? Sin is, for a lot of folks, just making mistakes. And this idea that there is going to be a judgment, that one person, God, is going to figure it all out, balance it all out, I think for a lot of people just seems beyond their full comprehension. Not saying that we fully comprehend it, but the Bible teaches it, and so that's what we go with. So, tonight for a few minutes, I just kind of want to talk about the first, second worlds again, the standards, and how we're going to try to talk to third world people. You think of the standard that exists outside of self. Higher powers is what we call it. Third world thinkers are the law. They are a law to themselves, self-rules over everything. And again, that's a difficult concept. I would even say, I've got friends who've served in the military who, a lot of the guys I've known are, you know, retired now, dropped papers and all. But they said it was developing, and it was hard because the Marine Corps guys, Paris Island, that we hung out with and talked to, there was a standard, you know. We make Marines. We don't just do anything differently. So they had a standard. I remember years ago we were at Busch Gardens and ran into a guy who was in the Army. He had just gone through his basic training. And he said the weirdest things, which were things like, in basic training, if their drill instructor hurt their feelings, they could write them up. Now, for most of us who have had really no experience in military, we're kind of like, okay, you don't do that. Drill instructors are the law. I mean, they are the law. They say, jump, you ask, how high? You know, that kind of thing. My dad told the story when he was in basic training in the Navy that one of his drill instructors had barked at somebody, you know, to jump, and he jumped. And as the guy came down, he hit him really hard in the stomach, knocked him, you know, had his breath out of him. My dad was telling me that. I'm like, whoa. And he goes, you know why? I said, have no idea. He said, because I didn't order, according to the drill instructor, I didn't order you to come down. Now, that's just foolishness. But there's a toughness about these guys. And this is what I'm trying to get to. The tail wags the dog in a lot of society. It's not society who has rules. It's, you know what, this is what I want to do. And this is why I want to do it. You want to know why HOAs, house associations, exist? Because of this. Because one person says, you know what, I want to paint my house bright, green, blue, something that nobody else has because it's my house. I want it to stick out. Everybody else is kind of like, it's garish. We don't like that color. So what do? We come up with an association that makes tons of rules. That's kind of a knee-jerk reaction, an extreme reaction, but I think sometimes that's what we feel like we want to do with a third world thinker is just overreact to them. Just, you're stupid. That's not going to help anybody. And I know that because nobody likes to be told they're stupid over anything. The individual's perceived need greater than everyone else's. And that's the third world thinker. That doesn't mean everybody in the world thinks this way, just third world thinkers, and they don't wear t-shirts. We don't either, you know. I don't walk around with a shirt that says second world thinker. If I did, I know I'd get a lot of weird looks, like, what is that? But you never know, that might start a good conversation, or it might just start a conversation. One of the things I would suggest when trying to talk to people who are third world thinkers, and they manifest that again, this is my truth, I hear your truth, I hear my truth, which means it's all the same. Again, the social media aspect is everybody has a platform, everybody has access to the platform. So therefore, my opinion is equal to the opinion of someone who may have studied something for a very long time. I'll give you an example. When COVID-19 started, we all became epidemiologists, did we not? We all did. We all knew everything about disease and cells and things. And we argued with people about what we know when none of us literally knows much of anything other than what we've been told. And with something like this, I mean, even the experts were struggling to have standards in all this. And so we were struggling to have all that. I do have one friend who is an epidemiologist in Houston, Texas. I remember talking to him when this all started. He said, "We have yet to see what this is." And that's what he said, which was basically, "I don't know." Okay, he's got a PhD in chemistry, this and all that. I'm like, dude, okay. If these guys can't figure it out, how in the world are we all supposed to just have it all figured out? But guess what? We all tried. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, we all arguing with everybody because we know. How do we know? None of us are epidemiologists. And I would say this, there are absolutes that we can't change. Yeah, you can't work around them. And I would say science in general, and I'm using specifically gravity, because it's an easy thing to illustrate to pretty much anybody and everybody. We all work with gravity. We don't even think about this, but when we walk, we are working with gravity. Otherwise, we'd either just float off the planet or we'd just fall flat on our faces. You don't start thinking about gravity until you lose your balance. When you lose your balance, guess what? Gravity becomes an issue because if you lose your balance, you might just fall. Now, I know this is a funny one because math and I do not agree. It just don't get along. I even use calculators, and guess what? I still punch in wrong numbers and wrong things, like instead of dividing, I'll multiply, subtract when I want to add. But all I'm trying to say seriously is mathematics is a good place to go to talk about absolutes. Again, third world thinkers aren't thinking absolutely. They're thinking, it's me that makes the decision. My feelings make these decisions. And I know I've used the illustration with you before that when the Pharisees were offended by Jesus, what he taught, because what he taught in Matthew 15, Mark 7, is that they were hypocrites because they were following more closely the traditions of their fathers, not just their dads, but their fathers, you know, antiquity, and not God's commandments. And the specific thing Jesus talks about is how money was to be given to help their parents. And instead, they came up with a term called Corban. It's not a biblical term. It's a term they made up to say it's been dedicated to God. God didn't command that. God said, take care of your parents. And instead, they came up with this, I can't do that because my money's Corban. And so Jesus called them hypocrites. The Pharisees were offended. The disciples said, Jesus, you offended them. And Jesus' reply to me is very simple. And I think I understand it where he simply says, let them be offended. Every plant my Father has not planted is going to be uprooted. There's judgment. He doesn't say, well, we offended them. So sorry that we did that. We need to go explain things. We need to go help them figure this out. He just said, let them be offended. And I'm not saying we just want everyone to be offended. It's not like we're waking up every day saying, today, I'm going to offend somebody. But when we are talking to somebody that we feel like we're not even speaking the same language, we're using the same English terms, let's say, but we're still having difficulty in talking to them, there has to be a standard. And the point ultimately that I'm trying to get to with science in general and mathematics is the existence of absolutes that do not change no matter where you are, no matter when you are. That's what an absolute is. In other words, when Isaac Newton discovered, he found out what gravity is and came up with mathematical equations and all. He didn't invent it. He discovered what was already there, what had always been there. And guess what? Physicians, but that's not it. Physics dudes. Engineers. Yeah, physicists. There you go. Gesundheit, you know. These guys and ladies both are coming up with things that, well, Newton came up with. They're working with this. They don't say, well, you know what, if we insert this number here, it just changes gravity. Gravity is an absolute, you don't change. Can't change. You work with it. That's how we put rockets into space. That's how we make satellites float around the Earth without coming right back down. You know, these are the things that they work with, or things that do not change. And I would say this, that absolutes point ultimately to order, not chaos. Paul, he'll put this out, that God is not the God of confusion. The Greek word would be chaos, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints. Now, the Bible here, I know this right, you're like, well, okay, I understand what you're saying, but it is not necessarily something that when we talk to somebody who's a third world thinker, that they're going to be highly impressed with Bible. More than likely, they're not. And I want to say this. Paul, look over in Acts 17, because Paul doesn't quote Bible to those Athenians who were listening to him talk. This is Acts 17. Paul is in Athens. This is where he's in a city. He's on the run from the Jews. And in verse 16, Paul was waiting for them. He's waiting for Silas and Luke and these others to catch up with him. He's alone. And he's waiting for them at Athens. His spirit was provoked because he saw the city was full of idols. Well, he, in verse 18, notice, comes up to Epicurean and Stoic philosophers. Now, they're first world thinkers. They're the guys who think there are absolutes, but it's outside of us. We talk about things that are outside of us, not this is how I feel or think because this is how I am. They also conversed with him, and some said, what does this seed picker wish to say? And others were saying, he seems to be someone proclaiming foreign divinities. And he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection, so they took him, they brought him to Mars Hill, the Areopagus, and they said, may we know what this new teaching is that you're presenting? For you bring some strange things to our ears. We haven't heard all this. We wish to know, therefore, what they mean. And so we're told by Luke in verse 21, all the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there would spend their time in nothing except telling or hearing something new. Now, for you and me, we're kind of like, that sounds pretty intense, but that's what they did. They didn't have TV to watch. They didn't have, you know, social media to let everybody know what was going on. They sat around and talked. And so Paul starts off, and in verse 22, he says, I perceive, I understand, I see that in every way you're very religious. Now, I know some translations will use the word superstitious. That carries more of a negative connotation with it, but I don't think he's starting off by saying y'all are a bunch of dummies, you know, very superstitious people. But he's just trying to say, look, I see the evidence of your religious ideas. And as I passed, I observed the objects of your worship. And he doesn't denounce idolatry here. He doesn't say anything about it. He just says, look, I noticed the evidence of your religiousness. As I passed along and observed the objects of your worship, I found an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. Well, he uses that as an in. He doesn't say, you guys are a bunch of dummies because you worship everything. He says, I want to talk about the unknown God that you say you don't know anything about. I want to talk about it. That's where he starts. And maybe we have to find something like this to start with others. But you notice what he does. As he goes through, he speaks about God who made the world and everything in it. He doesn't go quoting Genesis because they don't know Genesis, but he just tells them. And he goes on by saying in verse 26, he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth. The Greeks didn't believe this. The Greeks thought there was a bunch of different options in the beginning. They have a cow involved and all this kind of thing. It's pretty actually bizarre, I think. But they still have a creation story. But notice, he made from one man every nation. And he determined their allotted periods, the boundaries of their dwelling place. And he says why? That they should seek God. Perhaps feel their way toward him. Find him. He's not far from us. He is not far from each one of us. And notice the next two quotes in verse 28 are outside of biblical purview. I have footnotes. The ESV does really well with that. The first quotation, in him we live and move and have our being, is from a guy named Epimenides of Crete. He was a philosopher. They knew of Epimenides, just like they would know of Socrates and Aristotle and guys like that. Well, Epimenides was a pretty popular Greek guy. He quotes him. That's his quote. To me, this is really interesting. Paul doesn't go on and on about all this Bible in the Old Testament, he doesn't. He quotes to them somebody they would have known and said, yeah, we respect that authority. As even your own poets have said, we indeed are his offspring. That's from this guy named Aratus. I have a footnote that says that. It's a poem called Phenomena. And it's actual, it's there. But again, the point is he doesn't use scriptures to talk to these people who didn't know the scriptures. As a matter of fact, I think if he had, they probably would have had more arguments against anything that he said. He's trying to find, and I think this is part of what he means in 1 Corinthians 9, becoming all things to all people. Because what he shows here is, I know these guys. I know, not know them like personally, but he knows about, he's read Epimenides. He's read this other guy, Aratus. I know these guys. I am able to converse with you because I know these things. So we need to find common ground with third world thinkers. I mean, really, we need to find common ground with all people. But third world thinkers, that's part of what we are trying to do, is to get them to at least say, yes, there are absolutes in this world. There are things outside of us we cannot influence at all. We can't change these things. We may want to, but we just cannot do it. And I would ask this, and I don't know what the hard and fast answer is, but where in the natural world is there chaos? Now, you might think tornadoes are chaotic. Well, they do a lot of damage, but I've known folks who are meteorologists who study tornadoes and say there is nothing chaotic about them. They're very well ordered. They're extremely powerful and extremely destructive, but they are an orderly thing. Tornadoes only spin in one direction, by the way. They never spin in a different direction. I mean, it's always interesting the way that works. I mean, there's certain things in the natural world that happen. This last couple of weeks I've been catching up with NASA, and you know, they got their telescopes looking out into the universe, and they've got these two very large galaxies, not just an area, but galaxies that are colliding. And it's really interesting watching it as they're talking about this and trying to show the pictures. But even with all that, the scientists are like, there is an order to this seeming chaos of galaxies colliding, because there's going to be something coming out of this that's expected, that's anticipated, because this is what they've watched with other things happening like that. So that's all I'm trying to say, is that there is something about the natural world we can point to. And I think ultimately we're wanting to point people to say, God, who created everything, including this natural world, has created moral law too. Just like natural laws don't change moral law. Look with me in James 3. I've got a couple of these passages here. James 3, then 1 Peter 3. James talks about wisdom. And there is a difference between the wisdom of God and the wisdom of Satan. And he identifies this wisdom as satanic, demonic. James 3:13, who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, so it's not just that he knows things, he behaves well, let him show his good works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above. It is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. Where there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there is going to be chaos in every vile practice. Chaos ultimately comes from us. I understand when people say religion hasn't helped us. As they look at Roman Catholicism and say, okay, here you've got the concept of people who do what they want to do, the way they want to do it, and smack religion on there, right? They put a label. They're not doing what God actually says. They're not reading God's word. They're not thinking his ways. Well, there's going to be chaos when people are selfishly ambitious and jealous, as he says here. Verse 17, the wisdom from above is first pure, peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial, sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And then 1 Peter 3. This is a good passage to understand that we need to be ready to talk to people. This doesn't mean we have everything figured out. I have learned probably one of the most effective ways, when somebody asks a question that is outside your understanding and outside even my own understanding, I mean, really, how hard is it to say, I don't know? I know there's a sense of pride, but at the same point, if you don't know, you don't know. And it may be someone comes and says, look, here's this. What do you say about that? You know what? I haven't even thought about that. I don't know. It does two things. One, it shows you don't know and you're willing to admit it. But two, you can move on back to the point you're trying to make. I've had this happen a number of times where I don't know what it is. It's just a curiosity. You have an answer for here and you have an answer for that. What do you think about this? You know, maybe I don't want to get into that right now, and I'll tell them. I don't know. I'll have to think about that. Let's get back to what we were talking about. And it's, I'm not going to say always works. There's nothing that always works in that regard. But at the same time, it helps a lot. 1 Peter 3:14-15. He says, even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you're doing the right thing and people are hurting you, you will be blessed. Have no fear. Do not be troubled. But in your hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and respect. I know there are different words in different English translations, but that's the point. Do it gently and do it with respect. We know if someone is harsh with us, doesn't make it better, doesn't make us want to be gentle. If someone is disrespectful, we don't say, well, here, I'll be respectful. It just makes it better, right? No. So we need to be gentle. We need to be, as he says, respectful in this way. Paul in Ephesians 4:15 says, speak the truth in love. Now, this doesn't mean the truth being spoken in love is always quiet, that the truth being spoken in love is always apologetic. You know, sometimes it's just plain spoken. Jesus said, after they said, you offended these people, let them be offended. I would not say that Jesus said that with any ounce of hatred. It's just the truth. And Jesus at times, like we read in Mark 10, when he spoke to the rich young ruler, looked at him, loved him, and said, there is one thing you lack. He said it in a way that had to be effective. He said it lovingly. But you're like, well, look, the rich young man went away sorrowful, grieving because he had so many things. Yeah, but the truth was told. So it doesn't mean just because somebody doesn't like what you say, and I've had people do that to me where they're like, I can't believe what you say. And I'm like, we just read the Bible. I didn't do anything but read the Bible. You're not arguing with me. You're arguing with what's been written here. Again, we're trying to get people to a point where they are willing to listen to the word. Paul put it this way to Timothy, 2 Timothy 2:24-26. The Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness. Same word James uses, by the way, and same word Peter uses in 1 Peter 3. God may perhaps grant them repentance, leading to a knowledge of the truth, which shows you something here. Verse 25, God may perhaps. Who? God may perhaps grant them repentance. I know we've talked about this before, where 1 Corinthians 3:5, Paul says, I plant, Apollos watered, God gave increase. That's exactly what goes on here. We're kind, we're patient, we're correcting with gentleness. God may perhaps grant them repentance. Plant, water, God gives increase. Leading to a knowledge of the truth. And they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil, the trap of the devil, after being captured by him to do his will. I think that's kind of interesting, too, how Paul puts that. Rules. I know a lot of people just don't like rules. It's just the way we are. I think most people, I know there are people who do like rules because there's a safety, a security, a sense of safety and security. I'm one of those who basically I want to know what the rules are to see what I can do in finding a loophole. And that's the way I am. I know there are other people like that. Most people really just don't want rules. They don't want to be told that what they're doing is wrong or how differently they should be doing things. And yet, you could talk about traffic. What if there were no rules? I know sometimes we feel that way, right? There are no rules in traffic. Stop signs are suggestions. The red light means green. Green means red. I mean, you know, we all see crazy, crazy things, and we may participate in crazy, crazy things. But if there were no rules, there would be absolute chaos. I mean, there really would be. It would be horrible. It would be like driving in India. I watch these YouTube videos sometimes of this guy. There's a motorcycle I was interested in. He's in India. And in the beginning of his YouTube video, he's riding in New Delhi. It is it's just insanity. I cannot imagine. And he's like, riding here is a little stressful. I thought riding in South Florida had stress attached to it. New Delhi? Man, we ain't got nothing on them. But again, you could find the necessity here of saying, if we didn't have any rules at all in traffic, how would that go? Oh, we need rules. We do. And lead someone from that view to the idea of rules morally. I mean, really, it's not arbitrary. Our Creator made these. I know I talked a little bit this morning about the grocery store lines and 20 items or less and how upset we get with all that. You know, a guy comes up with 150 items or two buggies worth and you're like, no. We understand there should be some sense of not only there being a rule, but how to put that rule into effect. And there are probably a lot of better examples y'all could think of that are maybe even more simple and easier for us to talk about. But those are the things we need to think about as we talk to other people. Every rule has an exception. I heard this growing up quite a bit. Different school teachers. I had a philosophy teacher in high school that wrote this on the chalkboard. Every rule has an exception. And I know it took a little while as we all kind of, I mean, her point basically was that every rule has an exception, which means there's a rule that doesn't have an exception. That's what an absolute is. I agreed with when she wrote that up. I mean, it took a minute to think. I was like, you're right, because that means there is a rule that doesn't have one. She didn't like that. Well, nobody likes that, because that's kind of the point, is we don't want rules. I want to close with a passage in 2 Corinthians 5, 10-11. Paul writes here that we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. I want to say this because I think we sometimes need to remind ourselves that when we're talking to people about things, we need to be nice. And it's not just nice for the sake of nice, but if someone's being disrespectful, we back off. You know, I'm thinking of conversations you might have where all you have are the words. You don't hear the person's tone. Social media, that's some of the best places to find an argument. It's probably one of the worst places to make arguments, right? Because people aren't, they're reading between lines, reading the point of emphasis that isn't there. But ultimately, we need to be gentle and respectful, like Peter was saying. Again, Paul here, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one may receive what is due for what he's done in the body, whether good or evil. I was reading a little bit in the last couple days, a particular German philosopher, and his point was, it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a person who lives for God or lives against God, or you don't even believe in God, your life is lived moment to moment in faith. Because if you don't believe in God's existence, you're living in faith, there's no God. I have a book that's called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. I like that. I like the title of the book. So you either live thinking in your mind there is no God, so guess what? You're going to live that way. You have faith in that. I believe there is a God. And so I believe that I'm striving to live in faith that there is a God. And I know there are people who say they're agnostic. That's kind of cheating, isn't it? You know, I don't know if there's a God. I don't know if there isn't a God. You got to make a choice. Agnostics are working their way toward atheism, almost all of them. It's just kind of not clear in their mind to say it's this thing or not. When we have people who just gang up on us and yell at us, doesn't help us, we get angry. If we're doing the same thing to folks who aren't religiously minded people, you know what they're going to think the next time they come across a person who they are thinking is religious and they just had that experience with us? I'm not going to be able to talk to that guy. He's going to yell. He's going to, you know, say mean things. We can't do that and win souls. So there's a lot here, I know. But ultimately, I think that as we talk to people who are saying, I'm the standard, we've got to point them to the absolutes of the world around us that are easy to see, that are impossible to argue against, and go from that point, hopefully, to where we can bring them closer to an understanding of God. The song that Andrew has chosen, number 707, Why Keep Jesus Waiting? I know tonight we didn't really talk about what it is to become a Christian. But as we conclude our lesson for the night, we need to think of God's standards. We just were reading there in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 that we must all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. How much better is it going to be if we're on the right side of the judge? Now, I've watched TV shows with judges, and it's, you know, like Law and Order. You know, I'm so glad they brought that back, to be honest with you. One of the things I find interesting is you got a judge, and sometimes it's like we need to find a judge who's on our side. Or, don't worry, I know this guy. Okay, that's great. We know this guy. I'm not trying to sound flippant, but we know the judge. And if we've been baptized, we've been born again, we're in his family. And he knows us. And that's what we're talking about, is knowing him so where we can stand before him. And it's going to be all right, because we've complied with his perfect will. If you're not a Christian, you can be born again right now. Being baptized, come forward as we stand and sing.